Hello, welcome to Tweet Me Harder, the world's first, best, only, and last talkback-enabled interactive audio pod blast.
This isn't the fade-out version.
I'm David Malky.
And I'm Chris Straub.
Thanks for tuning in. This is how the show works. Hopefully you know by now. You can Twitter to us at any time. Our user is TweetHard, and this is the very first show, so please use the hashtag TMH1. Any Twitter that says TMH1, we will be able to see, and we will be using for who knows what. I don't know what. Maybe we're going to sell them. Maybe we're going to make shirts based on them.
That's it, though. Shirts are so played. Why don't we put it on other merchandise like thongs or clocks?
Clocks?
Not black shirts. Yeah, yeah.
Clocks just that you wear around your neck, plasticky. Like Flavor Flav, or clocks that you put on your wall?
You could. But you know what? If you wear a clock with a tweet on it around your neck, why don't we just make you a shirt?
If you wear a clock with a tweet, because the clock is an accessory. You can wear that with anything. A shirt you have to wash in between.
On any color shirt. I like it.
Yeah, it's modular.
That's not bad.
So here's the thing. So what else can we put tweets on? We can put them on underwear. We can put them on shoes. We can put them on
You can put it on anything that's worn.
Well, you wear shoes every day for sure.
Yeah.
We wear.
Hey, you could put it on. I got it.
Tell me.
You create a process. You'd have to know a little bit more about making soap, but you make it in soap. But when you wash your body, subsequent tweets are revealed.
Oh yes. I like that. So,
right?
You know where I thought you were going to go? When you use the soap, it embeds tweets on your skin.
I think it would just streak them.
Well, that's where the technology comes into play.
Oh, well, yeah. That sounds like
okay.
A VC sort of a deal.
So here's the thing about soap that reveals tweets over time. There's a similar sort of thing with toilet paper. Have you seen this where it's like the novels or whatever that are written like one square at a time on toilet paper, and as you unroll the thing, you get the whole story?
No way. Is that a thing?
In fact, I don't know how many people are doing novels. I think you typically see this in very sort of ideologically extreme websites where they sell the toilet paper with the thing that they hate on it, like the face of Osama.
Sure, yeah,
or
yeah.
The pages of the Quran.
I guess the story that they hate.
Right. Yeah. Boy, I hate War and Peace. Let's embed it on toilet paper.
good thing, because I had Taco Bell and.
And so, but really, it's almost like a Twitter feed because of the revealed slowly nature of it. You're not going to unroll the whole thing and read the novel. You're just going to do it, eight squares at a time,
yeah, but,
3 times a day.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that you have to figure out some like optimal redundancy, because I'm not going to use a square. I got to take care of business.
Well, sure. I mean, it's the same thing with Twitter. Something can stand on its own or be part of a longer series, I suppose.
What if it's a really good book and I got to take that on like the train and I'm just unrolling? I'm spooling it onto another roll.
You have a pencil or something that you're re-spooling it onto, and basically you're making like a Talmudic scroll.
Of toilet paper.
So my question for you is, if the right-wing websites have the toilet paper with the Quran or with Osama's face, what would the left-wing websites have? I don't really think that any of them have actually done this, because it's such a horrible idea and such a sort of, they're too tolerant.
It's really a sour, yeah.
But what would that product be like? What would be on that toilet paper roll for like the super liberal audience?
Are you posing that to the listeners?
Yes. Actually, yes. Tweet us TMH1, hashtag. What is on the toilet paper roll that the left-wing activists sell?
I got an idea.
See what you have to say.
I got an idea.
Okay, what's your
suggestion? How about pictures of flowers and the earth? Because those need poop to grow. And that's just natural.
I like
that's
this.
Just good.
I like this. So what we're doing is subverting the whole idea of toilet paper as something to put.
Why is it such a bad thing?
Oh yeah. So the first way of thinking is, I hate this thing so much, I'm just going to put poop all over it. But the other guys are saying, no, poop is natural. It's from our body. It just.
That's nothing wrong with it.
So here's, okay, this is what I like. Not just that, but what that suggests. So the whole recontextualizing the idea of toilet paper literature. Maybe you don't even, well, maybe the toilet paper is just the format and you don't even put poop on it. Like, maybe there's some form of toilet paper literature that its ideal form is not even used in the bathroom. It just takes that format for some other reason.
It's like super microfiction. It's a completely disposable fiction.
Yeah, the whole idea of it is the fact that it's super delicate.
Let's see, Aloha Air Cargo tweets, the toilet paper would be made out of cloth so you can wash and reuse it.
I guess so. I have heard of this. I have heard of the reusable toilet paper where they have, it's almost like a Kleenex box and they're cloth. And they have a little
bit. But then what do you do with it when you've got a box full of this filthy...
Well, you wash it.
No. Well, and you know what, though? That gets away from the idea of the story, because it has to be a story you want to read again.
Yeah, and so maybe that... Maybe that, well, yeah. Here's
or maybe,
a, here's a thing.
Or you know what? Maybe just a memorable, you know, like a parable or a quote from the Bible. Because you people like to have that in their home all the time. If they read it a million times.
If it's going to have quotes or if... Excuse me. If it's going to be individual squares, because these things are not on a roll. Reusable toilet paper, its format is wipes. It's not something you tear off of a roll. So each selection on the toilet paper has to be modular. It has to be, like you said, it's an aphorism. Maybe it's a poem.
Maybe it's like the magnetic poetry.
Wait, so what happens is you use it and you stick it to your wall and you build a large poem over time?
No, you don't stick it to your wall. You just have to remember what the word was. Or you know what? Maybe you take a picture of it and then you string the pictures together digitally. You know, be smart. This is the 21st century.
All right. We have Dustin Coryell says, it's like Far Side calendars. So there's something separate on everything that is part of a greater theme, but you just get one little bite at a time.
Oh, wow. That would really develop.
Yeah.
That would really take a long time to get to the end of it.
Well, a Far Side calendar is just a gag a day. It's not, you know.
Oh, I see. You're saying they're not interconnected stories. It's just like a little laugh. But, it's like a Ziggy cartoon.
Well, I thought you said laugh.
Oh, sorry.
But the idea is, like, I could see someone taking this as a challenge. What's the thing that they could write that's so compelling in the toilet paper medium that people would want to go and reread it again every time they wash their toilet paper?
I don't know, but you know what? Just the sound of the phrase "wash your toilet paper."
It's probably not paper. I mean, they probably have some other. It's probably toilet wipes. I really don't know what the terminology is.
Ah, man, it's Sunday. The banks are closed. I can't get any quarters, but I got to do laundry because I got to take a dump. And now, ah, jeez.
The gotta do laundry because I got to take a dump is sort of a tough thing for the situation. People use cloth diapers. It's the same idea. It's just applied to the whole household.
Yeah, but somehow a baby's waste is like a more natural, fun thing. You know, it's pleasant, even though it's really not.
We don't have kids. Yeah, this is not something that I'm sure we're going to get a lot of agreement on from the child.
It's almost adorable.
Well, there are also services, diapering services, I believe they're called, where you just have a bin and you put all your diapers in them, and then some.
What some friggin' expense!
You put it on your porch, and they come once a week, and they go and launder them. It's like a uniform.
What kind of left wing guys are these? They got enough money to pay for an adult diaper service?
Well, they do the trade off with the cost of buying disposable stuff, plus of course the environmental impact, you know, of all the waste that it generates. Both
that's
in its
true.
Manufacturing
they could
and
rationalize
it's, you know, at the end product.
Wow. I didn't expect to start with this.
Well, what did you expect to start with? Not poop?
Well, not poop, pretty much.
Okay, so let's see. We asked everybody to respond to the question, what's the worst topic for a talk show?
Hey, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, what?
Uh, All right, go ahead.
You're listening to Tweet Me Harder, the world's first, best, only, and last talkback-enabled interactive audio podcast. We are now listening to what people say about the worst type of talk show. We have Professor D says, attempting to disprove every world religion as a valid belief system. I think that's,
which
yeah.
I mean, it's offensive. It could be interesting if you're open-minded enough.
I like how he says attempting to disprove. So the idea is not in you're presenting an ironclad case. It's just the actual it's the act of arguing. It's that sort of
because well he's got a bias. He's saying clearly you can't.
Well, I don't know that he does or he doesn't, but the whole point of any kind of a talk show ever about religion is always going to be hearing different sides of the equation and having them sort of argue with each other, and the listener in my experience, the listener is always listening to these kind of shows just waiting for someone to say what they feel. And everyone has so divergent opinions about religion, I think that happens fairly rarely.
Yeah.
And
so is that just the ultimate troll show? Just like, because nobody will ever be satisfied by anything that's uttered on that show?
I think the only way anybody, from a listener standpoint, is going to be satisfied is if all they want is for their side to be heard. And everyone has their own little sort of belief system that they've carved out for themselves that's either close to or far from, you know, any other person's belief system. So as long as they get someone on the show, if someone on the show says what that listener believes and they feel like they've had their day in court, I think that's all they need, because they're not expecting to win any like no one is ever converted by listening to a radio show unless you're Johnny Hart and you watched eight hours of Saddle. That has to be an apocryphal story. I'm sorry, that must be an apocryphal story. Do you know this
that's
story?
That's a big deal, yeah. He had a lot happening.
Right.
And, I mean, I don't know what it is, but
well, did you ever hear the story about how he was converted?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's what happened, but...
Well, Johnny Hart from BC, he used to just be a regular old cartoonist. If you read the oldest BC comics from, I guess he started in the 60s or 70s, I forget. But they're
perfect. Yeah, it's just workaday caveman gags.
I think it's pretty interesting, because there was a lot of pretty wacky concepts in there. There were clams that walked around, and there was a guy making bubbles out of water that he carried around and had his head.
Blasphemy. Blasphemy.
No, this is before he had any sort of religious fervor. And what happened was his wife had convinced him to install a satellite dish at the house. And so the satellite dish guy, on purpose or not, tuned the station to some religious, you know, preaching channel, saying, I have to leave it on this for 2 hours so we can tune in the signal, because this is back in the days of the dish, you know, in the backyard that's 8 feet wide. And
oh, no.
And so Johnny Hart's sitting there watching this TV preacher, and he's converted. And that's the story. And then from then on, BC is about Jesus.
That's pretty good. Good on that cable repair guy.
I guess he's doing the Lord's work, right?
What else we got?
Okay. Someone says turn down the tweeting bird sound. That's pretty good.
I could do that right now.
Provided
that I'm the one to play it.
Maybe we should turn it down. Here's the last like 18 tweets. Why are there bird noises constantly on the audio feed? Your Twitter client is too loud. Is there a sound effect? What's going on? Dial down the tweeting bird sound. This is what we like about instant feedback.
Don't worry, it's easily fixed, and I'm going to try it right now. What do you say?
I don't even hear that.
Yeah, I can't hear it either.
Perfect. All right.
Is it even playing?
Sounds like it's...
All right, I guess it worked.
Sounds like the problem is solved.
I guess we did it. Thanks to the internet.
Hey, so let me ask you this question. What's your feeling on the bikini car wash?
Oh, wow. I was just looking at that today.
Wait, what?
Unrelatedly.
Is that a thing? Like, I'm talking about the concept, or is that like a site?
No, it's not a site. It's many, many sites, my friend.
Okay, I just want to make sure
we're
on the same page.
I feel like it's exploitative.
Does it exist
outside
pop culture? Have you ever seen a bikini car wash in real life?
I've never seen one in real life. Now, I've seen, like, student car washes. I've seen church group ones. I've seen like recovering drug addict ones here in Dallas, believe it or not, related to church groups. Right. That's actually kind of a whole, it's like a Venn diagram. They all merge at some point.
Wait, this is or is not involving bikinis, the drug addict one.
No bikinis though.
No bikinis.
No bikinis.
Some? Is it like half and half?
Nope.
Just no bikinis.
That's just wishful thinking, just not at all.
Well, I mean,
maybe beneath what they're wearing, but probably not.
I don't know anything about Texas. I'm just trying to guess. I'm trying to picture it.
Well, how about in L.A.? They got any of that?
Well, you would think so. I did get my car
washed. That seems like an L.A. thing.
Not terribly long ago at some kind of a church youth group thing that... But yeah, I think the church youth group and the bikini car wash are probably sort of the Venn diagram looks like Garfield's eyes, you know, it's sort of mutually exclusive.
And they just kiss.
I think the movie Bring It On has taught me that bikini car washes are a cheerleading thing, like a school fundraiser.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume.
So if they happen, that's probably, you know, how they happen.
But they're not doing it because they love bikinis and washing cars. They're doing it for money.
Well, here's the thing that I am not sure of, and this is what I wanted to get your opinion on. What do you think the quality of the car wash is? Do you think they get all the crevices? Do you think they actually get this window streak free?
No. You know what? They don't do any detailing at all. I think that they've got a great system in place to obscure the quality of the level of detail that they pay to your vehicle.
Right,
exactly. They probably didn't even do the passenger side.
Yeah, because they're so busy leaning sultrily over the hood that they probably don't even pull the wipers up and get the windshield at the bottom of the windshield.
Right, and you didn't care. You're just happy that they're talking to you.
Aloha Air Cargo on Twitter says, "Great if you're watching from the sidelines, but I want a good car wash, period." I think this is a very important thing to keep in mind. So the question is, the people that stop at bikini car washes, who are you going to have? You're going to have pervy uncles. You're going to have fundraising enthusiasts, people that want to support the booster club or whatever. Now, here's the question. Are those groups mutually exclusive? Are you attracting one at the expense of the other?
Or both. I mean, or maybe it's just one is an excuse for the other. Although I guess I don't know why you would be a pervert in order to boost the academics club. It's more likely the other way around that you, under the guise of supporting the school. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like, honey, I'm going to go take the car to be washed. The school's having a fundraiser.
Isn't that nice? There's this whole thing about a perception of value that I always had a problem with as far as going to strip clubs or, you know, this kind of a thing with a bikini car wash, where it can go one of two ways in my head, and both of them are negative. Number one, she's washing my car and I'm looking at her and she's like, "Hey, I hope you're enjoying the show." And then I'm like, go to school, enjoy your life, you know, have a nice family. I'm not this guy. This is awful. And then the other end of it is if she looks like she's completely disappointed and sad to be there, but she's doing it anyway because she's gotta.
Right, because
and then what does that say
trying,
about
she's
me?
Trying to get to camp, and you're yeah, the one that
there's yeah, and I've got the $5 that's going to get her there.
And how
but I ain't letting her have it until she washes my entire car in the sun.
And how much of that is a ploy? Like, I'm not saying that anybody who looks miserable at being in a bikini car wash strip club is not actually miserable. I'm sure those things are miserable occupations. It's like by looking miserable, the onus is now put on the visitor or the patron to pay more to make it so that they don't have to be out in the sun all day long. Those fundraiser things, dude, I don't think they typically end with a dollar amount being hit. So there's no threshold. It's just we're going to be here till 6 o'clock regardless.
Well, let me ask you this then. Do you think that if it's a guilt factor, could you make more money with like parka car wash? And everybody, all the kids are wearing coats and blankets and they're just miserable. And they are all getting heat stroke. And your money will get them out of there and to safety. So tip them, for God's sakes.
Okay, so So are you saying that when you tip them, they start taking off the clothes so they become more comfortable?
No, because here in that scenario, it's too easy to say, why are you wearing that? Take it off. You're going to die. And I'd prefer that you would install like a dictator of the car wash who's making them wear it, and you have to appease him. And they're like, we're just pawns in his mad game. We have to wash your car while we're dying.
Okay, so far I'm seeing a couple marketing problems with getting people into the car wash. One, the fact that you have children in parkas soaking wet in the hot sun. Number two, that they are being overseen by some
too
sort
sexy.
Of dictator. Whom you have to pay to appease for the children's well-being.
It's not real. It's not a real thing.
Okay, so number three, it's people play-acting a child labor dictatorship. And these are people that are asking for your support.
Well, did you know that story about the Dutch version of Santa Claus, right?
With the one where he beats you if you smoke pot?
Yeah, he beats you up if you were bad that year. But then as we grew more civilized, now he just pretends to kick you. You know, it's almost like it has the intent but not the actual brutality. So you going to this car wash with the dictator, there's an understanding that there is play acting going on here, and you do not breach that
You have to stay in character. At all times.
You have a contract with this group of kids.
Okay, so this is what I want to know. Yeah. How many dictatorship parka car washes does it take before the public consciousness begins to understand the social contract inherent in the dictatorship parka car wash?
You know what? I don't know. It's an unlimited number. It depends on how sadistic an area you live in, I guess.
Alina Pete says, sketchiest bikini car wash I've ever seen. Also sold 50-cent hot dogs. Not good. Not good at all.
Wow.
50-cent? Now, is this like the wrapper? No, it's probably not.
Which would be expensive and really awesome.
Right. It's probably gold encrusted. What about hot dogs with little scallops in them so that they don't dislodge the diamonds in your front teeth?
Wow. Or they have like optimal pierced crescents where you put your teeth so you don't have to disturb your grill.
Talk about niche marketing.
That's pretty solid thinking.
Although
it'd be easy to machine.
I was going to say pre-bitten hot dogs, because that way you don't have to worry about you can still enjoy the chewing action. It's not a milkshake hot dog where you have to, you know, drink it. You can still use your molars and everything, but you don't have to do the incising at all. Everything is bite-sized.
You can kind of stick it in the corner of your mouth like a cigar, because you don't need the front of your mouth whatsoever.
Well, I was going to say smaller versions of them, so maybe what you'd end up doing is going to the market, picking up the little cocktail weenie package, and then opening the package and dumping it into a new package that says bling bling hot dogs, marking it up by double and reselling it.
That's, well, in practice, I mean, that's probably what you're going to get. I don't think anybody's going to go to the trouble of, machining hot dogs so that they break off easily. Although when you first said hot dogs with scallops in them, I thought you meant the sea creature, and I thought, what a decadent sausage!
I do like the idea of machining hot dogs. Like there's a giant factory press that's just, you know, it's like a laser cutter, and the hot dog is being held by a vise on either side, and it's being moved around, like rotated very precisely, so that the laser can cut it into a very precise shape.
It's like the robot arms at a auto mill.
Yeah, exactly.
Spinning it elaborately in the air.
Yeah, and then there's the giant robot picks it up and sets it on the, you know, conveyor belt or whatever. And, I mean, really it comes down to marketing. I mean, most makeup is made in, like, three factories. And it's all the same makeup. And the label that they put on it is what determines the price that you pay for it. Whether it's,
right.
you know, Macy's or whether it's Nordstrom's or whether it's the really high-end Beverly Hills boutique, you know, there's a whole scale at which it's the same makeup in different packaging and at different price points.
Yeah, that's absolutely a given. So, I don't know how we got here from car washing.
Well, I'm talking about the hot dogs. I'm talking about you're reselling those hot dogs marketed for, you know, different audiences, and this audience can only pay X amount, so you only charge X amount and you put it in the food for less. And then this audience, you know, you can put diamonds in your canines, then you're going to pay $100 for a bag of hot dogs. You just have to market it appropriately.
For a bag of hot dogs. The thing that kills me is that, like, be it hot dogs or the car washing, anytime you have a business that advertises with a sign that's written on the back of a refrigerator box, there's going to be a dearth of quality in the end product, I think.
Wait, so, no, we wouldn't sell wrapper hot dogs on refrigerator boxes. Oh, I see what you're talking about. You're talking about getting both ends of the spectrum pre, like, on their way up to multi-platinum album, and when they're destitute on the street. You got to offer homeless hot dogs in a language that they speak.
You can chew these. That's the slogan.
Yeah, and then instead of talking about it's got the little scoop out so that your diamonds don't get caught in it, it's you just change the marketing. You make it a little bit less flashy, and you say, look, we understand you don't have teeth.
Yeah, you will not break your one tooth on this hot dog. That's our guarantee.
The problem is you might have to use pictograms, depending on how literate these people. I mean, I don't know, maybe homeless people. There is one homeless guy that reads a lot of books on my walk every day. But
oh. Well, I was going to say you split the difference. You invest a little money in one of those voice chips that go into stuffed animals, and it's just on the package.
Oh, yeah, like on greeting cards. I like that.
So yeah, and then there's just a picture of a thumb, and then they know to push it, and then it's going to tell you soft hot dogs.
These hot dogs are for you. They're not those fancy rich man hot dogs. These hot dogs are made with your unique needs well in mind.
Oh, man.
Okay, so on the Twitter. Pazaduck says that you have a nice male patriarchal fantasy going on. You, in particular, I'm much more even-handed.
Is that me?
Clearly, yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
I didn't say that the hot dog car wash dictator was a man.
That's true.
Change up their genders. Why did you assume that? I think you're the sexist.
I wonder, and that's true. We have never once on this entire show ever insisted that the bikini car wash is women.
Could be dudes. They make bikini thongs for dudes to wear.
And they even have bikini briefs. They're not even thongs. They actually have a little coverage, right? I don't know.
They're probably more decent.
Okay,
that's
so
the
bikini
the church
man
group
car wash. The question is, who is the market for car washes? Typically, it's people that get
guys
like,
cars.
Do in the way that more women buy greeting cards than men. Do more men get their cars washed than women? I don't know. I would think it's fairly even.
Oh, I don't know. I think you're already going to deal with like a high end clientele. Just on the basis that their car is going to be nicer and they're going to want it to look nice. Because I have a Honda Fit and I could care less when the last time I was washed. I'm not going.
Right. So
I'm going to wait for it to rain.
So the people that are going to the bikini car wash are the kind of douchebags that also spent their money on a Porsche because they're not married. Or they are married, but they have a midlife crisis. And
yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
They're having a lot of trouble. And that's my assumption. If you own a Porsche and you're listening to the show, use the tag TMH1 and we'll discuss it.
I do want to put out a query. Use the hashtag TMH1 and tell us what is the most expensive luxury item that you have ever bought that you could have paid $8 for at the regular store, but you ended up paying $100 for it at the fancy store.
I got one.
Tell me.
Probably. My sunglasses, my aviators. Here's what happened. We went to Sunglass Hut, and there they're like $125. Put those on. All right, they're about what I expected because my dad owned a pair. And then we're like, we can't justify this cost, too expensive. So we drove to like a Save-On. I think we went to a gas station. We're like, these look exactly the same. They're exactly the same. Put them on. And there was just something innately, like, just didn't feel right. And what we should have done was put that one on first.
Yeah, then you wouldn't have known that.
That was a total setup. Yeah, so we ended up going back to buy the... Yeah, we bought the regular ones. We bought the expensive ones.
It's not, you know... I mean, if something costs more, it's usually better. That's a given. Like, that's the default nature of the universe.
I hope.
The question is, in this case, that, you know, the $100, you know, the difference between the $100 sunglasses and the $395 sunglasses at Save-On was enough. Like, it was $96.25 or whatever.
Yeah.
Worth of difference to you to justify that purchase. Right? I'm asking.
Yeah, it was hefty. No, it was. I mean, there was an upper bound. If they had been $300, I don't think I would have. There was no way I was going to buy them. Mm-hmm. But you know, you think about what you're paying for. You're paying for a little sliver of metal and some lenses. Oh, although I'll do a little bit tangential. I do have a funny story related to the purchase of my second pair. Some years later, after my first pair was scratched, I went to Sunglass Hut. I knew exactly what I wanted. But there was a young gentleman there who was probably just started working there. He said, "Can I help you out?" I said, "Nope, I kind of know what I'm looking for." And but I was curious because the pair I had I recognized, but then there was another pair that said on it, on the lens it said P, and I didn't know what P was, but they looked a little yellower than the other lenses. So I said, "Yeah, actually, I have a question. What is the P on these? What does that mean on the lens?" And he says, "Oh, the P stands for polarized. Once you wear a pair of polarized glasses, you're not going to use you know, the regular kind. And once you wear a pair of Maui Jims, you'll never go back to any other brand."
All right.
And I was thoroughly disgusted because I will not wear Maui Jims. And I felt really bad for him because there was clearly a line that he's been given, and it was his 20th time saying it. And him standing there wearing a pair of Maui Jims was not really a big sale to me.
Well, this didn't work. That I've seen. Speaking of people having that line, I've seen this a lot recently. My office is on a sidewalk. It's a storefront office, so there's plenty of people walking up and down all day long, and we get solicitors fairly often. Until I put up a sign a couple days ago. We were getting solicitors at minimum once a week. And
yeah,
these were not people that are selling you a Thomas guide door to door the way that maybe, you know, or like a calculator, an oversized calculator, like you may have seen before. These are people who are trying to promote businesses, and their promotional strategy is to just go to every other business in the area and drop off a flyer. Owner of a sign shop came by. There was a guy in a three-piece, you know, suit, full-on business attire from some local bank. You know, we offer financial, blah, blah, blah. Can I leave you with a flyer? Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. So anyway, so this guy, the last guy, and the one who broke the camel's back, made me put up the sign, was this really gangly guy in a long suit jacket. Is clearly an off-the-rack suit. Didn't fit him. Like, he's one of those body shapes. Doesn't fit real well in a suit. And he opened the door and he poked his head in and he looked around. He saw me sitting there. He goes, "Hey, man, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry." And I'm thinking, now he's asking directions. What's going on? He goes,
"Yeah,
I'm really sorry. I know this is dumb, but I'm here from Verizon, and I want to talk to you about our Fios service. I mean, do you guys have internet here? Or, like, are you all set up with that?" And he's clearly so embarrassed, and he just wants us to say, "You know what, we're all set. Like, we're fine. Here, you want some water? You look like you're about to pass out." And
Yeah.
So I said, you know what? We're all taken care of. Everything is, you know, we got it all wired in. And he goes, yeah, you sound like you're all set. You sound like you got it all. Man, you probably all just, you know what? Like, and you see him kind of mulling it over, the gears turning. And then he reaches in his little briefcase and he pulls out a flyer and he goes, you know, if you ever just need file service, it's the number one service. And he goes into the spiel. And I go, you know what? We're set. He's like, all right, it's cool. I'm sorry. Thanks. All right. Yeah. All right, man. Cool. And he left. And so, you know that he's obligated to do that spiel at some point, you know. And he's desperate to not look like a douche. And so he's trying to preface it. And I think the preface made it worse because he seems like a guy who knows better. And that's less forgivable than a guy who's just, oh, all right, whatever. They told me to say it.
Right. We've all been there. But what I don't like is when you cannot – what I don't like is when you can't connect to them on even that level. Like if I went to that Maui Jims guy and I said, I know you don't care about Maui Jims. Like it's just you and me. I don't want Maui Jims. So don't try to pitch me on them. But I will take these. You know, I know it's you're just working here. And he's not allowed to be like, okay, that's good, sir. He has to go, no, I am passionate about sunglasses. And Maui Jims are the ultimate in eye care.
Well,
you know, I cannot connect to this man as a human.
Stephen FC on Twitter is saying that, Chris, you must give them a try. I need polarized glasses. Maui is my family's preferred brand. Maybe they're
Or maybe that guy works there. Maybe that's the guy.
That's him, Stephen. Oh, dude, man.
I am sorry. Did you find a better job?
You made quite the impression on Chris for him to still remember. Speaking of sunglasses, this is not the Maui Jims, but here in Venice, I'm seeing probably – it's getting up into the 30-40% ratio number of sunglasses that – you know, among all sunglasses that we see among everybody walking around, the percentage of them that are the black plastic with the neon arms –
neon arms. Oh, yeah.
Neon yellow, neon orange, neon pink. Yeah. It's very sort of TNC surf.
I think it's coming back.
We're seeing this a lot.
And you know what? I think they're cheap, too.
Well, yeah. I see them at the – when I'm at the beach, I see them at the little boardwalk vendors, and they've got the rotating deal, and they're, you know, a million up.
I mean, this didn't take off. I mean, this didn't last for more than a month and a half. But you remember Kanye West's the shutter shades?
Well, that's something else. I see the shutter
shades.
Those
are like $5.
I see those on the same boardwalk little carousels, and I don't ever see anybody wearing them. Maybe one or two people, and you never know if they're wearing them ironically. But I didn't know about the Kanye thing, and so I thought, why are the shutter shades coming back? That's a really strange trend.
That was why. But the thing is that you lose. It's like a Riemannian sum. Like you lose 50% of your vision, but it's too granular. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not a 50% shade evenly like a pair of sunglasses. Like I literally cannot tell if Venetian blinds are up or down because I cannot see them. They're not effective sunglasses.
Well,
so I guess you're gonna get eye cancer and stripes on your eyeball instead of uniformly. It's not helpful.
So everybody that works in retail is going to have to be. This is something that we discussed recently among ourselves, that the person selling the product ideally should believe in the product, but this is not always the case. Sometimes you have people, especially at the corporate level, marketing departments, that don't actually have a good product, but they have to sell it regardless, and they have to make that pitch that this is the best product ever.
You were saying it's because a person like that, they don't really have a hands-on with the product, but they are surrounded by the literature with the product and the brand image and all that that means.
Well, because that's so powerful. The whole marketing relies on this keystone notion that our product is worth selling. And that's something that if your job is a marketer, then you cannot challenge that core assumption because it just comes apart like a house of cards. And well, in fact, when I was working doing trailers, there was one presentation we had to do for Disney. It was an internal sales presentation of which every advertising agency that works for a movie studio ends up spending about 30-35% of their time working on internal marketing materials for the studio to show itself and convince itself how great it is. And for stockholder meetings and for departmental meetings and all of this just BS. But this particular one was about the technology that was revealed with the movie Chicken Little, which was called Disney Digital 3D. And
okay,
it was
one
of those kind of 3D, you know, it's evolved into something else now. I don't think they even call it the same thing. But it's, you know, it's basically watching an animated movie in 3D. That's what it is. And so this was a sales presentation to theater owners, I believe. And the whole idea was you had to convince them that this was something that is worth retrofitting the theaters for. And Disney trades on their pedigree more than any other company has any right to. Disney hasn't had a real homegrown breakout hit in their animated division for, I don't know, decades, since The Lion King. Since Tarzan, probably. But, man, they use, maybe Lilo and Stitch would qualify, but even still, that's 10 years ago. I guess it's 7 years ago, but whenever it was, they trade on that Lion King imagery and the Tarzan imagery and the Little Mermaid imagery and the Aladdin imagery. They're just like, we are this company that has such a pedigree. So anyway, the moral of the story is this particular presentation had to be about all of the firsts, all of the ways that Disney is a trailblazer. And so you'll hear first feature film to use a multi-plane camera, 1927 Snow White. First, you know, this and that. You know, first, you know, animated.
A company of firsts that are all good, that are all equally good.
and so the nut that was the hardest to crack was the movie Mary Poppins. Because this was a landmark film for animation, the way it integrated animation and live action in 1964. Yeah. But it was not the first to do anything. Because that particular technology existed in smaller measures in other movies before that. And there was a movie... I think it was The Poseidon Adventure. There was something... 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I think it was 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which came out in 1962 or 3. Had some animated stuff in there. And it won an Academy Award for special effects. For, you know, its special effects. And so... Anyway, we had to come up with something that was the first. This was Disney's claim to fame for this movie. And here's what it ended up being. Mary Poppins was the first movie to win an Academy Award for special visual effects for significantly combining live action with animation. All of those qualifiers in there had to be in place. Because if you take one of them out, some other movie had done that. There were other movies that won different Academy Awards or won different awards for doing the same thing, so on and so forth. But they had to be the first, and so we had to put all these qualifiers in there.
Then what?
Well, and then it just kind of goes to show that brand image is so much more important than the merits of the situation. Because the brand image is what creates the demand for the
product. There's a guy at Maui Jim Corporate who's convinced, and it's like a form of racism. It's like yellow journalism. They're convinced that Ray-Bans are gonna hurt you. You don't want to wear that. Oakleys, those are sharp plastic. That's gonna fall in your eye. Maui Jim's gonna save you, buddy, and it's gonna do it in a stylish manner, and it's gonna save you 40%. And it's called Maui Jim, and it's written real big on the lens, and I don't want that.
But don't you want everyone to see what brand of sunglasses you're wearing?
Yes. Yes, I do. That's why I wear the t-shirt.
The Maui Jim's t-shirt.
Here's some Twittering for you, the live power of the internet. Twit Bandit says, well, this show looked good on paper anyway, or are you guys being ironic about the worst show ever thing?
Wait, are we being ironic about the worst show ever? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
We're
being very self-aware. Yeah, because clearly we wanted to do a bad show to offend Twit Bandit. That was my goal.
I think that there's... Well, for one thing, I want the T-shirt that says, I'm wearing Maui Jim's, and then it has an arrow that points up toward the direction of your face.
I'm with Maui Jim, and then the arrow going up.
And then I want the secondary, like the further extrapolation of the T-shirt that says, I'm wearing Maui Jim's in an unconventional place, and then the arrow points elsewhere, not to your face. Could be anywhere.
That's a far better. That's a way better shirt.
Do you need the first one or no?
No, you don't need it. Because everybody knows, you could see it on your face. What I want is a shirt that implies an arrow with directionality, like pointing at you. Is there a way to do that?
At the viewer, you mean?
Yeah, at somebody who's reading it.
Saying you're not, but you wouldn't say you're, because you can't predict what somebody's wearing when they're talking to you. Or do you you only point your torso at people wearing Maui Jim's. I see. So it's a self-selecting method where you can limit your interactions to other people that share your tastes.
Yeah, and if you are on board enough, then anybody else who comes up to talk to you like, hey, man, you're like, no. You just wave them off.
You have to keep your shoulders pointed away from them, lest the shirt be proven wrong. Right?
Yeah,
because
and you don't want
to
do that to
if
Jim.
If the shirt is proven wrong, it has no power.
Right. And you
if it's wrong
Jim,
once, it could
Maui
be wrong every time.
And all. Yeah, it's a bummer. That's a much better shirt. I'll give
you're
you
wearing Maui Jim's with an arrow pointing at the viewer.
And you know what? If you're not wearing them and you happen to see it, you might be like, maybe that's in my future. Maybe I got to think about that.
Yeah, maybe it's metaphorical.
Like we are all Americans after 9/11. We are all wearing Maui Jim's. That's the same parallel that the guy at corporate would make, I think.
Everyone's
it's
wearing Maui
image.
Jim's, they just don't know it yet.
Yeah. You're wearing them on the inside. Now you just got to show us.
Okay. So we have on Twitter, we've got Sammy DJ2L says, bad show idea is to construct jokes and explain the punchline to death. So we talked about this briefly before, and I think the main key here is that he wants us not to merely explain the punchline of jokes, but to construct the jokes, which is a very difficult and more time-consuming process than simply explaining existing jokes.
I don't know if it's worthwhile, you know? Is it better? I mean, you could imply a joke and then explain it away. That takes a lot more talent to be able to invent a joke wholesale.
Right,
just on the fly.
Out of whole cloth. And then you have to explain what you've just done. It's sort of like doing a magic trick where you do it, you perform it, and then you go back and you deconstruct it. You say, watch my hands. Now, while I'm waving over here, my other hand is going around the back. I mean,
but
is that what he's asking?
They had that show. They had that show. Remember?
The
secret magician.
The masked magician.
Yeah. He was wearing like a painting of a facehugger mask, and then he went on Fox and he showed everybody how to do the tricks.
Hold on. I'm too confused by all the masked people. There's this guy who's some kind of a mask. There's some other guy with a box with a question mark on his head. He's some kind of a thing. There's some other guy that's got like a mirror.
Are you talking about the unknown comic?
Is that who he is with the is a paper bag?
He's
on
got
his
a
head?
Plastic. He's got a paper bag with the eye holes and a question mark.
Right. Okay.
But man,
so
that's old.
We got paper bag. We got box. We got some kind of mask.
You got Destro. He's got a That's just cool. And Cobra Commander.
There was a guy at the this is a pretty funny story. There was a guy at the Staple comic show where he had one of those spinning rims on his face. It was one of those the cheap like the fake plastic spinner rims, like a hubcap.
Oh yeah.
And he had it mounted in front of his face. And so his entire head is this spinning turbine. And he was a supervillain. And I thought that was pretty cool. And he came up to me and he kind of glared at me and he leaned in really close. And I'm like, oh man, I'm scared of the supervillain. And he leans in close. He goes, spin it. Spin it. I'm like, oh, okay, sorry. So then I spun it and it got it going a while. And then he went off and went to terrorize some more people.
Wow. That is a super ineffectual villain.
I like the idea of a supervillain who is reliant on others. You know, he likes to involve, because clearly he could have reached up and spun it, but you know, he doesn't want to break the fourth wall in that way. He just wants
to go
out and involve other people.
That, yeah, you spin it, and then he goes, you did this, and then he killed the kid.
Yeah, he's like, now what you have wrought. And some other guy, the guy next to me, he starts feeding his arm through the thing, and it's like a meat grinder. And the guy's laughing and looking at me, he's like, you started this, you cannot end it. And the guy's like, oh my god, my arm!
And you're just sitting there praying like, oh, slow down, come on. Come on, friction. Something's got to stop that thing. It's so cheap. It can't spin forever.
It was made of plastic. It was from Pep Boys for $7.95. But the guy's just like up to his elbow now, and he's like, oh, God, oh, Jesus and Mary, and I just don't know what to do. And it's like,
And very accusative. Why'd you spin it?
Didn't you know what was going to happen, man? Didn't you see? And the guy's just laughing. Ho, 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 ho. Because this is why he's laughing. The guy's meat and his blood and his gristle is feeding his gaping maw and powering him. He's like the Sarlacc. He needs protein into his body.
Is he eating the meat? Or is it just sort of a metaphorical, like he's feeding on the fear?
Well, I think that spinner thing is pulverizing that guy's arm.
So you're saying you're not seeing all of the meaty chunks, that some of them are going in there.
I didn't see anything coming out the other side. So my only hypothesis is that it was actually atomized. It was so powerful.
Like a nebulizer.
Yeah, he was turning this guy's flesh. Body into molecules. And then
like a meat vapor.
Using them for nourishment. That's the only possible explanation I can see.
That's staple for you, though. You get the crazies out there. This one year I was there, I swear some guy was drunk. I swear to God.
Boy, oh, what a weirdo.
Pretty nutty.
Okay. All right, we've got Ranex on Twitter saying, what did one prenatal twin say to his brother? Scoot over. There's not enough womb.
Whenever I form a joke like that, I feel like you got to go super deep. Like you have to then say, "What did the prenatal say to his brother?" The prenatal with a lisp say to his brother, and then now you've explained why it's womb and not room. You know,
I feel like you got to get that in there. You have to explain every nuance of it.
Yeah.
It's like because the guy's like, well, no, the womb is not actually the correct – I mean, room is actually what it would be. So – but when you set up the lisp, it's like – it seems like you're telegraphing the joke when you do that. Or is that the point? Because you don't – you actually want it to be an anecdote. You don't want it to be a joke. You just want it to be like, hey, they're actually –
whose anecdote is what did these unborn children say to each other? You weren't there. You didn't do that.
Apparently, they were really crowded. It's like maybe it's a very important issue we have to talk about in utero, space allotments, and there's going to be a whole industry of these like bizarre devices that you go up. It's like putting up a cubicle wall in your uterus so that every twin has their own room early on.
I was going to say that is a good secondary punchline for that joke. You say, "What did one prenatal twin say to his brother? Scoot over. There's not enough womb." And then what did both of them say? Hey, who's this guy? Get him out of here. Why is he listening in on our conversation? There's already not enough womb, and there's a full-grown man listening to us.
This is what I want to see. I want to see a rigorous scientific study that, you know how twins sometimes develop that twin language? Because they spend time with each other, and they sort of, you know,
yeah, they just kind of complete
things that
each other's
they
thoughts.
Share among themselves. I want someone to take a randomized sample of 200 in utero, you know, gestating twins, erect cubicle walls in the uterus, and see if they develop that twin language. Because my suspicion is that it's something that they develop before they come out. It's like a plot. they figure it out. They're like, dude, when we get out there, we're going to take this over. Like, let's figure this out now, because we're going to be distracted. It's like diving into battle. It's like you have your conversation in the plane when you're putting on your parachutes. You don't actually do it while you're on the battlefield, because it's
so you're saying interrupt that key time, and you've broken a fraternal bond forever.
Well, I'm not – look, broken is a tough word. I just want to say let's compare, because what you're totally ignoring here is that there's going to be – in order for this to be a rigorous scientific study, there's going to be another 200 pairs of twins totally unaffected. And we're going to make sure that no one erects a wall in there. Doesn't matter what kind of commercials the mother sees. Doesn't matter what kind of sponsorships the father brings home from work. Doesn't matter what kind of billboards they pass in that car. Doesn't matter how much baby Bjorn wants to get his baby fingers in that baby womb. We're going to make sure those twins get all the nurturing possible. So there's a benefit here as well. Look, I agree. Some children are going to be separated from their twin possibly for life. Others are going to be just so coddled. And we're going to see, is what's that language? We've got to crack that code, because these babies are plotting and we don't know what they're saying.
Can you imagine the shock on their faces when those two twins, they're 3 years old and they're sitting there playing and they're going, and then you come in, you're like, I'm in that now. And they go, oh God, this guy knows. This guy knows. It would be worth it. 40 years of research to do that. Scare some 3-year-olds.
You know what Mr. Baldango said? He said, to separate the twins, just draw a line in the gland. That's not going to separate them, because you have to actually physically erect a wall. Have I said nothing in the last 20 minutes?
That was more of a reach, because, I mean, it's a rhyming word, but it doesn't – there's no lisp that's going to convert S into GL. That's not a thing.
Okay, what if there was?
Well, then I guess that guy probably has it. This is not a funny story, but it is a true story. I learned it in psychobiology class in college. They took a patient who, grew up normally all his life, but then because of a head injury, the connector part of the two halves of the brain, the corpus callosum, was severed.
Yeah, I think I've heard this story, but go on.
You've heard this story?
And so they
were testing different parts of his memory, and so they're showing stuff to just his one eye. They're showing it to like the part of the brain that remembers, you know, family. Or they're showing it to the part of the brain that does not remember family, but remembers facts and numbers and stuff. And they're like, "Who's this?" And it's his aunt. And he's like, I don't remember. And then he does something with his hands, and he's like, "Emily, it's my Aunt Emily." And they're like, "What did you do with your hands?" And he's like, "I drew E on the back of my hand, and so I knew it was Emily." But it was his other hand from the other side of his brain controlling that part, but it wasn't the speaking part. You know what I mean? It's the other half of the brain knew the answer, but couldn't talk, and it was going, "God damn it, it's Emily. How do I tell you? Okay, I can use my hand. I'll write on the other hand.
This is a different
get the signal
story
to the other half."
This is a different story. The one I heard was about a guy who pronounced S sounds as GL. And so the problem was he couldn't order like he went to the sign shop and he's like, "Can I have a Glein?" And they're like, "What are you talking about? Get out of here." He couldn't get nothing.
Yeah.
So then he went to go and try and get a cheesesteak sandwich. He goes, "Can I get a cheese glaze glanwich?" And they're like, "Get out of here, you weirdo."
Get out of here, you creep. I don't know what that is.
Look, I'm not saying he had an easy time of it. He came in here trying to sell me some Verizon service. He's like, "Do you guys need any internet cervical?" I'm like, "Cervical?" And I thought he was talking about my neck. So I was afraid for my life. Is this guy going to hit me in my neck? Is Verizon after my spine? Like, maybe they're like leeching in like people's cerebrospinal fluid and they're going to start charging them to get it back. You know, I had Verizon service. This is a true story. I had Verizon service of long distance for my – you have to get phone service to get DSL, right? Even though I don't use the landline. So
yeah.
I got the cheapest phone service possible, and they started charging me for not using it. They started charging me a low activity fee of like $4 a month because I wasn't making any calls.
What did that have to do with the GL man?
Because it was the same guy. It was the Verizon guy. He came in here trying to sell me internet glurvis. And I'm...
Well, you know what?
What?
You know what? I know that guy. And once you get to know him, true friend, good guy, good guy. So I defend your honor.
He had a pretty kind of a shabby-fitting glute, though, so I should, you know, he should go down to the
glory
and get himself a better, anyway. So we got more of these, like, puns about being in the womb on the Twitter, and I'm going to not read them.
but some of them are good.
Alex Dono says, just imagine for a moment if there were no hypothetical situations. Well, if there were, let's see, let's think about this. Let's really give it some thought. If there were no hypothetical situations, then you wouldn't be, it would be hard to theorize, right? What else would happen?
Yeah. Well, that would, that's an Isaac Asimov story. And yeah, I'm going to completely miss the point of the tweet. But that was, wasn't it? I want to say there was an Asimov story where they found aliens who didn't lie. And that meant they didn't have stories. They didn't have actors. Because those are lies. You're not this character. You did not commit a murder. That's fake. And then they had to deal with humans who could lie and lied all the time for fun. And what are you going to do? You know what? Probably murderous rampage.
We got
sure.
Some people talking about your corpus callosum being severed. Split brain aphasia is what Bette Noir says. And then we have the Green Avenger talking about a guy who had no corpus callosum. His hands mirrored each other unless he controlled it consciously. Also, he was a jerk. I imagine if you had that problem, it'd be hard to be a jerk. And everyone's telling you that it was Galaxy Quest, by the way.
For what?
For the probably the lie thing. Was that the... was. Maybe it's something else, too.
Oh.
We've got three people all of a sudden.
Well, you know
saying,
what? A good enough movie to get confused with Asimov. I'll tell you that.
I do remember the Corpus Callosum guy, though, seriously. And I remember there were things like if he saw, if they showed one brain, one eye, a spoon, and one brain, a knife, and they put, you know, a wall between the eyes, so you one eye seeing one thing at a time. Then if you ask him to say what he sees, I forget which side is which, but he says spoon because that's the speech center of the brain. That eye.
Oh, that would tell you which side it is. Yeah.
Right. And then if you ask him to write down what he sees, he writes down knife because the writing center, that eye sees the other thing.
That would completcompletely corroborate my tale.
Yeah. It's probably the same thing.
Not a liar. I didn't make it up, is what I'm saying.
But what if I don't... the problem is, if you are not a liar, then I am going to assume that you never lie, right? Because you are one of this race of people that cannot lie. Is that fair to say? Right?
I think that's base case. You got to go from somewhere, so let's do that.
Okay. Well, that's good. It's just good to know moving forward.
Just go ahead. Take that ball and run with it.
There's nothing that has arisen in our interaction to make me think that that's untrue. Okay, so this is what I'm going to do. I think we're going to wrap up shortly, but I want to give a challenge to everybody out there. And this is something where you can respond on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, good idea.
You can respond on the Twitter. You can also leave us a voicemail. We have a voicemail line that you can
let me
leave
read
us
it.
A message.
Let me All read right. it.
Do it.
You can call us and leave us a voicemail, which we may play on the air, at 206-337-8560. And that doesn't spell anything, does it?
No, I tried to make it spell something, and it spelled like... it spelled split brain aphasia zero, but I didn't think that was good to remember.
It's not memorable. Not a good mnemonic, as they say. So, yeah, so what's your challenge?
So my challenge is... I would like you to tell us your stories of unanticipated victories. And these can be, you know, if you're going to Twitter, make sure they're short and memorable. If you're going to have a slightly longer story, feel free to give us a call and leave us a message. But please, you know, don't ramble on. And I would like to know, I'm not going to say more than that, because I would like people to take that at face value. And give us your stories of unanticipated victories.
And that's going to be the second one.
That's going to be...
We're going to be using hashtag TMH2.
That's exactly right. So TMH1, this is the hashtag for episode 1. As soon as this show is over, we are moving on to content for episode 2. So you will be using hashtag TMH2 for show number 2.
Sound you know what? I feel good about this show because it's got a lot of rules, and I can really hang my hat from that.
It's not haphazard. Structure.
I want more structure. I know we kind of got away from the sound effects, but I was using them. I'm gonna find more to further categorize different spans of time as we discuss them. That's what I'm talking about.
All right. So I think that's so. My question for you then, Chris, if you need structure in your life, as soon as this show is over, are you just in a ball on the floor immediately?
I've got an elaborate rule set and a D6 that I follow.
What's
I just
for
carry
dinner?
It with me.
Let's roll.
I wish I had more space on here to write my favorite things. I only got room on the sides of the diver like BLT, spam. Not a lot of space. It's
depending
a shame.
On the condiments, you know, you're able to sort of make mix and match different things. And...
Salt, pep, yeah. It's not a good life. It's not a good life.
But at least
not a healthy life.
At least you're not ever wondering about what to do.
And that's the main problem
that I've seen with just going through life is those periods of idleness. It's like, well, what now? I don't know. If I had a rule book, I could figure it out, but. Clearly, Chris hasn't figured out.
Should we go to the theme?
Well, it'll be nice when you finally... I'll end with this.
Yeah.
Your rule book is... I'm a little bit concerned that your rule book, as you've added to it over the years, is now so big that you cannot leave the house because you can't carry it with you.
I can't physically take it with me.
It's too heavy.
And you can't put content on the Kindle, is that right? Because I would take it with me, but I don't know how to do that.
Well,
and
all...
learning how to put it on there is not in my rule book.
You have to meticulously handwrite your procedure for learning how to put content on the Kindle, and your
and now
list
the
of
book
things
is bigger,
to add to the
and
book.
Now what are you gonna do?
Your list of things to add to the book, you're already so behind on it that you're barely in the, you know. Third grade birthday party stuff. It's like you've got a good 26 years of backlog.
I'll never catch up on this one. Look,
next.
I'll go out with you guys later. I got a big night.
I got to figure out how to use the Ness Advantage.
My power glove. Yeah.
When I was in second grade, I remember we were getting drinking fountain water, and I was drinking water, and I was also doing charades. With my friend because I thought of something to say and I didn't want to wait until I had finished drinking the water, and so I started enacting charades as I kept the water in my mouth. This is a true story. And eventually he guessed what I was saying, and it was the power glove because I was doing the button press on my wrists and the whole deal. And then at that point it's like I had enough of the water. I swallowed it, and then I said the rest of my important message, which was pretty cool, huh?
That's as much of an imperative as it requires.
That's
about all you could think about it.
Well, because we saw it in Nintendo Power, and it's like, holy smoke, that kid's wearing sunglasses. It must be amazing. And his hair is windblown,
and his
room is burned.
Yeah, and there's light coming out of the TV, and
there's
presumably
scorch marks
from
all
the
over
power.
His clothes. He clearly is some sort of a burn victim. Ikari
and his parents
Warriors
are all burned up, and they're like blown away.
Right, everything from I guess Gauntlet was a Sega map, was Genesis game, right? Gauntlet, but
you could play,
no, Golden
you could play
Axe
Zelda
was a Genesis
2.
Game.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, clearly, like Ikari Warriors had manifested itself in the form of bullets coming out of the TV screen and had riddled the wall behind him with chaos, and I needed that in my house. His mom was all freaked out with her head half in the doorway and one, you know, hand kind of splayed and her eyes wide.
Yeah, I'd take those pullouts in the Nintendo Power. You put that on the door to your room. No parents are getting in there. Kids only, mom.
Welcome to the fun zone.
Yeah, and there's like Mario, and he's holding the star, and he's like all cool, and there's the guy from Iron Sword or whatever.
Clearly it made an impression. There's Kid Icarus. There's the guy from Rygar.
Yeah.
They're on all these crazy adventures.
There's Simon Belmont, my favorite.
Hey, remember
he's gonna,
pop culture?
He's
going to
whip
those
nasty vegetables away.
Yeah. I like talking about pop culture because it's things that we lived through back in a more innocent time, and now our lives are horribly meaningless, and we can only find meaning in the innocent joy of trying to beat the Lost Vikings for 18 hours straight.
I know. I played a game that had a lot of repetitive, qualities recently, and I was like, man, when I was younger, I would not have given up this fast. I would have been at this for the next 10 hours, but now I don't have the patience.
Well, this has been Tweet Me Hard, the world's first, best, only, and last TalkBack-enabled interactive audio pod blast. I'm David Malky.
I'm Chris Straub.
Thanks for tuning in.
Follow the show at tweetmeharder.tumblr.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at tweethard username. And we will be back here 7 days from today, Wednesday, the 10th of June, at the same time, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. We hope you will send us voicemails and tweets about unanticipated victories in your life or others. And we hope to be able to take that material and somehow forge it into an even better show than today's. Not that this wasn't great.
No, it was pretty good. I liked it.
Let's not sell ourselves short.
It felt great.
It was all right.
It was okay. A lot of nerves, though. A lot of jitters. Why?
A lot of people giving us abuse. No, a few people giving us abuse. A lot of people giving us great stuff to work with. And as we figure this show out, I'm sure there's nowhere to go but up, down, possibly sideways, diagonal if we get on some kind of...
That sounds crash. Like Dave Matthews lyrics.